The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
She's just a girl and she's on fire, hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire, filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
Thank you for joining us at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship right here in sunny Collegeville, Pennsylvania. For those of you on Zoom, thanks to the magic of the internet and our wonderful tech team, we're also able to bring this close to your home or into your home. We are a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world with kindness. I'm Cindy Westfall. I'm a member of TPUF, new member of TPUF. Been attending for a couple of years, and I want to personally welcome you this morning. Wherever you are in your life's journey, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, whomever you love, whatever your gender, identity, or expression, we welcome you into our circle of compassion and caring. Happy second day of March. The days are getting longer. In addition to being the month when spring officially returns, it's also Women's History Month. And our Soul Matters theme for this month is trust. Women's History Month is a time to reflect on the significant contributions and achievements of women throughout the history. It serves as a reminder of the struggles and successes of women across various fields, including politics, science, art, and activism. By acknowledging the roles women have played in shaping society, we promote awareness and appreciation of their historical impact while inspiring future generations. This month provides an opportunity to reflect on ongoing gender equality challenges and encourages dialogue about women's rights, human rights, and empowerment. Ultimately, Women's History Month fosters a deeper understanding of the diverse experiences of women and underscores the necessity of inclusivity in building a more equitable future for all. Trust plays a vital role in all of that, especially in the celebration of Women's History Month, as it highlights the importance of fostering relationships and alliances that empower women and amplify their voices. This month serves as a reminder of the collective trust that women have placed in one another throughout the history, as they have banded together to challenge societal norms, fight for suffrage, advocate for equal rights, and break barriers in fields, in many different fields. By building trust among women and their allies, we create a supportive environment where ideas can flourish and collaborative efforts can lead to meaningful change. As we honor the achievements of women past and present, we also reinforce women's attributes, which we bring to the table, which are caring, compassion, raising our families, and cultivating trust in our communities. ensuring that the narratives of women's contributions are recognized and celebrated, and facilitating a future where all women, and therefore all humans, can thrive. So let us reflect on three women of influence: a poet, a labor activist, and a civil rights activist. First, we'll light our chalice. And as we light the chalice, I'm going to read the words, "A Sturdy Flame," by Reverend Julianne Lepp. We light this chalice with hope, a sturdy flame we nurture in these difficult times. We light this chalice with the heart of compassion for a nation divided by politics and strife. We light this chalice knowing that it will take all of us to repair this world we live in. May we find rest, compassion, and the hope that we need to nurture ourselves and each other. May this sturdy light remind us of the people we can be and the difference we can make in the world together. God bless you. And then we'll also light the peace lamp. And we'll read, "May peace be with us, with all the people of the world." Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy and Kendall, for those opening words and welcome. I'm Linda Weaver. I'm vice president of the board here. And right now I'm representing women because it's our month. You may, for those of you who are new to the fellowship, you may realize that this is probably not what you would call a typical worship service. But for those of you who are familiar with TPUF, there is no such thing as a typical worship service here. We are a welcoming community, and we have a variety of folks with lots of talents that we have a wonderful minister, and we share all those with you every week. So our next on our program is our gathering song, and it is Fight Song by Rachel Platten. And this is my fight song by Rachel Platten. It's a powerful anthem about resilience and empowerment. Released in 2015, the song celebrates overcoming obstacles and finding strength in oneself. It has resonated with those facing challenges or striving to achieve their goals. Mike, thank you.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. And all those things I didn't say were wrecking balls.
My power's turned.
on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion. This is my fight song. Take back my life.
Well, that's really pretty much a personal reflection on how I feel. I'm a septuagenarian, and we fought as women. We fought a lot of battles in my 72 years. And it seems like we're starting all over again some days, but we have a lot of fight left in us. So with that, now we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to have Manny McNeil come on up. And in honor of our Soul Matters theme of trust, she's going to read a little book about trust. And if Manny, do you have any kids that want to come up and help? I'm not sure. Good, Ryan will. Thanks.
Testing, testing. I'll go off the cuff and remind you that librarianship is a female-dominated industry. The front lines of people fighting your book bans and making sure that your communities have access to free services like internet, tax services, all the different things that libraries provide that aren't just books. The front lines are women. So, anywho. I work in a library where 17 out of 18 of us are women. So Kevin, who is our lone male, is very fortunate to work with all of us. So today our story is called A Little Book About Trust, and it is by Greg Davidson, Michael Weider, and Jen Zeech. So trust is a little word that means something pretty big. Trust is knowing someone will always be there. Trust is holding hands when you cross the street, knowing you are protected. Trust is swinging really high and knowing you'll always be safe. The best part of trust is that each and every one of us can choose to be trustworthy. Because trust grows through actions. And you can lose trust through actions too. If you look hard, you'll see that so many things start with trust. Sharing your toys, being kind, telling the truth, and being silly and fun feel better when there is trust. When people trust each other, it helps us thrive. Because trust fills our world with love. The end.
Hello, I'm Kendall Westfall. I'll be reading a poem by Mary Oliver called When I Am Among the Trees. Mary Oliver was an award-winning poet who often wrote about nature and the feelings of peace and stillness it invoked, which is maybe something we all need at this time. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches, and they call again. "It's simple," they say, "and you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine." Thank you.
It occurred to me while I was sitting thinking about trust. Eric Erickson is a developmental psychologist, and the first stage of a child's development is trust versus mistrust, which he learns from his mom and dad, or not. And it can be a lifelong debilitating factor when that trust is not honored at a really early age. Just a thought I had, these things just spring into my mind sometimes, sorry. Thank you for indulging me. And thank you, Kendall. That was a great poem. These words of Mary Oliver are a reminder to us to take moments to count our blessings. Nature is a blessing, and being in nature is a blessing. It is our blessings and mindfulness of such that sustain us through our battles. And our battles are many sometimes. One woman who battled was Frances Perkins. She is a UU, or was a UU, and an influential American social worker and politician who served as the United States Secretary of Labor from 1933 to 1945. She was the first woman to hold a cabinet position in the United States, and she played a crucial role in shaping New Deal policies during the Great Depression. Born on April 10th, 1880, which makes her an Aries, by the way, in Boston, Massachusetts, Perkins graduated from Mount Holyoke College in 1902. Her work in social service began in New York City, where she became involved in labor issues, advocating for workers' rights and helping to improve working conditions. One of the most significant events that shaped her and mobilized her to battle was the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in 1911, which resulted in the deaths of 146 garment workers, many of whom were young women. The tragedy spurred Perkins to take action on behalf of labor reforms and workplace safety laws. As Secretary of Labor under President Franklin D. Roosevelt, Perkins was a key figure in implementing several landmark policies, including the Social Security Act in 1935 and various labor standards such as the minimum wage and the 8-hour workday. She fought for unemployment insurance and workers' rights, significantly contributing to the establishment of the modern American labor movement. Perkins served in her role throughout Roosevelt's presidency and was a prominent advocate for the defense of labor standards during World War II. Her legacy continues to inspire those in public service and labor rights today. Frances Perkins passed away on May 14th, 1965, but remains a pivotal figure in American history for her contributions to social justice and labor rights. So let's talk about what UU principles she met in her life and in her battles and her advocacy. Frances Perkins' actions and beliefs closely aligned with several UU principles, particularly those emphasizing social justice, the inherent dignity of all persons, and the importance of community. So here's a few key correlations, especially for those of us who are new to UU. One is social justice and equity. One of the core principles of Unitarian Universalism is the commitment to social justice and the belief in the interconnectedness of all people. Perkins' advocacy for labor rights, the establishment of a minimum wage, labor protections, and unemployment insurance reflects a deep commitment to promoting equity and justice for marginalized workers. And indeed, Thomas Paine himself really initiated a lot of these thoughts in way back when he was that was about 100 years before she came along. Inherent worth and dignity of every person, that's number two. Unitarian Universalists uphold the belief that every individual has inherent worth and dignity. Perkins' work was rooted in her understanding that all workers, regardless of their background or economic status, deserved safe working conditions and fair treatment. Her advocacy after the Triangle Shirtwaist factory fire, where many young immigrant workers lost their lives, highlighted her commitment to this principle. Community and cooperation. Number three, UU principles emphasize the importance of community and cooperation. Perkins' approach to labor reforms involved collaboration with labor unions, social workers, and various community organizations. She worked to build coalitions that aimed to uplift the working class and improve their circumstances, embodying the idea of collective action for the common good. And the fourth point is moral imperative to act. Many of us feel moved to act, and then there's those people that just, sometimes they leave their families, their children, and move on to battle. And what inspires them to do that more than the moral imperative to act? Unitarian Universalism encourages individuals to act according to their conscience, often inspired by moral beliefs. Perkins was motivated by her personal convictions and her experiences in social work, which guided her efforts to implement policies that addressed the needs of the vulnerable and disadvantaged. Overall, Perkins' legacy as a champion of labor rights and social welfare aligns strongly with the key tenets of Unitarian Universalism, making her a notable figure for those who resonate with these principles. Her life and work serves an example of how individual actions can have a profound impact on society, echoing the Unitarian Universalist commitment to creating a just and compassionate world. And lest we think that all of these working conditions are fixed, we still have significant issues today in meatpacking plants where children are working, migrant children are working, and other such. We had a fire up in Pottsville of just a few years ago where some employees were killed in the fire because of poor working conditions. So although a lot of work has been done by people like Frances Perkins, a lot of work still needs to be done. Thank you.
I'll drink to that. So, for those of you who know me well, you know that I'm a retired labor leader. So, Frances Perkins was one of our heroines in the labor movement. In fact, we used to talk about the fact that when FDR asked her to be the first female cabinet member, she said to him, "Well, I'll think about it, but you need to do these following things." And it was the 40-hour work week, it was Social Security, it was many of the tenets of the New Deal. And of course, because she was female, she never got credit for that. And everybody, you know, says what a great president FDR was in starting all those wonderful programs. But if it weren't for Frances Perkins pushing, we may not have had some of those programs today. So the woman I'm going to celebrate today is Viola Liuzzo. So quick show of hands, how many of you have ever heard or were familiar with the name Viola Liuzzo? See, that's what I thought. Of course, Preston has his hand up. You know, not that you were listening to my speech at home several times, but anyway, you know, I was a history major in college in the 1970s, and I never heard her name mentioned, not once. Well, here's a spoiler alert. She was the only white woman killed by the KKK during the civil rights movement. It is now believed that her death sparked the passage or accelerated the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Well, who was Viola Liuzzi? She was born Viola Craig, Gregg, on April 11th, 1925 in California, Pennsylvania. Shortly after her birth, the family moved to the South looking for work. Her mother was a teacher and her father was a coal miner who lost his right hand in a mine explosion. It was during the Great Depression and the family was very poor and lived in one-room shacks with no running water. Having been poor in Tennessee for much of her childhood and adolescence, she knew all too well the racially segregated nature of the South. This would have a powerful influence on her activism. In 1943, her family moved to Detroit, Michigan, which was segregated by race. There was violence and rioting between ethnic groups, which again influenced her later civil rights work. In 1945, after two failed marriages, and she had two children out of those marriages, she married Anthony Liuzzo, a Teamsters Union boss, business agent. In 1964, she began attending the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Detroit. Viola was a UU. Then she also joined the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP. She also developed a close friendship with Sarah Evans, who was an African-American woman who ultimately became the permanent caretaker for Viola's five children after her death. She had three children with her third husband, Anthony. So on March 7th, 1965, and as I was doing this, I thought, oh my God, that was 60 years ago. 60 years ago, I was 12 years old. And I remember this. What a memory for a 12-year-old. But anyway, she was horrified by the images of Bloody Sunday, which we're going to see later in a very short clip, when 600 unarmed civil rights marchers were violently beaten by the Alabama State Police when they tried to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge. On March 16, 1965, Liuzzo took part in a protest at Wayne State University. She decided she had to do more. She called her husband to tell him, I'm traveling south to Selma. She responded to Reverend Martin Luther King's call for people of all faiths to come, saying that the struggle was everybody's fight. Leaving her children in the care of family and friends, she drove to Selma. On March 21st, 1965, more than 3,000 people began the third Freedom March from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. There were blacks, whites, working class people, doctors, nurses, priests, nuns, rabbis, homemakers, students, actors, and farmers. Many notable civil rights leaders participated, including Martin Luther King Jr., his wife Coretta Scott King, Ralph Abernathy, Ralph Bunche, Andrew Young. It took 5 days for the protesters to reach their goal of Montgomery, the state capital. Along the way, other protesters joined, and by the last day, there were 25,000 marchers who entered Montgomery. The event received widespread media coverage. Well, after the march, Liuzzo assisted Leroy Mouton, a 19-year-old African-American, in transporting marchers and volunteers from Montgomery back to Selma. While getting gas at a local filling station, they were subjected to abusive, racist comments by customers. First of all, there was no way at that time in our history, in our nation, in the South, could a white woman be riding alone in a car with a man of color. So that immediately drew the attention of the locals. So She stopped at a red light when a car of four white men pulled up alongside. When they saw the white woman and the black man together, they followed Liozzo as she tried to outrun them. They overtook the Oldsmobile and shot directly at Liozzo, mortally wounding her twice in the head. The car veered into a ditch, crashing into a fence. The men were found to be members of the local Ku Klux Klan, including Gary Thomas Rowe, who was an FBI informant. The bullets missed Mouton, but he was covered with Liozzo's blood, so he lay motionless as the Klansmen checked on their victims. After they left, Mouton sought help. He flagged down a truck driven by Reverend Leon Riley, who'd also been shuttling civil rights workers back and forth to Selma, but he was alone in that vehicle, so he was not bothered. So, within 24 hours of Liozzo's assassination by the KKK and the FBI informant Gary Thomas Lowe, J. Edgar Hoover launched a smear campaign against Liozzo. This is what I consider to be one of the black marks in our nation's history, and one of the things that our government did that was reprehensible. So he leaked false information to the press, subordinate FBI agents, and select politicians, claiming that there were puncture marks in her arm indicating recent use of a hypodermic needle. She was sitting very close to that Negro in the car, that it had the appearance of a necking party, a quote from J. Edgar Hoover. While attempting to hide the fact that an FBI informant was in the attack car, the FBI wanted to ensure that the agency was not held responsible for permitting its informant to participate in violent acts without FBI surveillance or backup. Rowe had been an informant for the FBI since 1960. The FBI was aware that Rowe had participated in violent acts with the KKK. These acts included attacks on the Freedom Riders in 1961 and having a role in the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing in Birmingham in September 1963. Prior to the shooting, right before the shooting, Rowe called his FBI contact to tell him that he and other Klansmen were traveling to Montgomery and that violence was planned. During the investigation, During the investigation afterwards, after the shooting, the FBI did not test Rowe's gun or the bullet casings for his fingerprints. The results of the autopsy, which was conducted in 1965, revealed that Liozzo's system did not contain any traces of drugs, and it also showed that she had not recently had sex at the time of her death. It was not until 1978 that the FBI's role in the smear campaign was uncovered, when Liozzo's children obtained case documents from the FBI under the Freedom of Information Act. So now you know that Viola Liozzi was a civil rights activist whose life and actions strongly resonated with the principles of Unitarian Universalism. Her life and her work continue to serve as a powerful testament to the Unitarian Universalist principles of justice, compassion, and the inherent worth of every individual, inspiring those who advocate for social change today. I ask you one final question. Why isn't her picture on our poster in the lobby of 100 influential Unitarian Universalists? And I think Preston has something to add to that, don't you, Preston? What did you do when I asked you that question? Thank you. Now let's watch a very short video as her family reflects on her legacy. Mike.
Fifty years ago tonight, discrimination in public accommodations was outlawed as President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That, of course, did not end the battle for racial equality, a battle that would cost one woman her life. Mark Strassman has her story.
Mary Lillibeau's mother was a martyr of the civil rights movement.
It's my mom's picture, and it says, well-behaved women rarely make history.
Viola Liuzzo, a Detroit housewife and mother of five, would become part of history.
If she had something to say, she said it. If she felt something needed to be done, she did it. And she saw Bloody Sunday and just had to do something about it.
It was Sunday, March 7th, 1965. Alabama police beat 600 demonstrators as they marched for voting rights. These images spurred Liuzzo to drive to Selma and join the protesters.
Mrs. Liuzzo was struck and killed.
As Liuzzo was driving along a pitch-black country road, Ku Klux Klansmen pulled up to her car and shot her to death. She was 39. Her daughter Sally was only 6.
Dad looked at me and just started screaming, "Mama's dead, Mama's dead." That's how I found out. Nothing was ever the same again.
Not for Liuzzo's family or for 19-year-old Leroy Moten, the only passenger in her car.
How often do you think about that night?
All the time. Somebody just shot through the window and all of a sudden car went off the road. You know, glass started hitting me in the face.
When did you realize that she was in real trouble?
When I tried to wake up. Well, I grabbed by the arm, pulled in and said, "Miss, miss, miss." You know, she didn't say a word.
After her death, there was a racial backlash against the Liuzzo family. They got hate mail. A cross was burned on their lawn. And at her school, Sally was jeered.
Grown-ups surrounded me, and they started throwing rocks at me, and they said, "You're a lover's baby. Your mama didn't love you."
Viola Liuzzo was the only white woman the Klan murdered during the civil rights movement.
Mrs. Liuzzo went to Alabama to serve the struggles for justice. She was murdered by the enemies of justice.
Her death helped further the cause. 5 months later, President Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act.
If Mrs. Liuzzo wasn't killed, we wouldn't have had a voter rights bill.
It took the death of a white woman
to get the votes to pass
the voting rights bill.
Right.
This is the Alabama road where she died. The marker reads, "In memory of our sister, Viola Liuzzo."
Was it worth it? Yes. I wouldn't change a thing. I mean, it's been hard. I miss her, but I'm so, so proud of her.
Mark Strassman, CBS News, Atlanta.
So, Preston, I think we should have a special ceremony when you actually get that poster. What do you think? Okay. So, this is the time in our program when we have matters of the heart. Alex, would you come introduce that for us, please?
Morning, everybody. My name is Alex Dooley, and it's time for matters of the heart. This is our embodied faith, the fact that each week we set aside time to be vulnerable. We know the importance of sharing, to bring forward the highs and lows that come pouring out of our lives. And we know the importance of hearing from each other's lives. If you feel so moved, I invite you to come forward and briefly share a joy or sorrow. If you are online, you may virtually raise your hand. And if you're here, you can come up to the microphone. Please start with your name.
We can bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. The word will appear shortly on the screen.
Beautiful.
So, Anne, glad for your activism and your husband's feeling better, and all good wishes continue to go his way. And Alex, thank you for your kind words. Appreciate that. We truly know, just some words from Chad A. Snyder. Know this, we truly know far less than we think we do. But let us know this much, we are not alone in our joy, in our loss, in our quiet, daily, blessedly ordinary moments. We are not alone. A small truth, maybe in a vast and rapid world, but let us hold that truth and trust it as we hold and trust the joys, the sorrows, and moments shared in this space we make holy. Thank you.
So what service would be complete without a church song? I mean, we're going to do one. And our closing hymn is hymn 101, Abide With Me. It's performed by Leah Morris. And it's an old hymn that likely appears in every Protestant hymnal in the country. And it's singing about a hopeful and comforting sense of something greater than ourselves. The lyrics were written and set to an English tune in 1847 by Henry Francis Light. Abide with me.
Abide with me. Fast falls the eventide. The darkness deepens. Still with me.
Let's extinguish our chalice with the words of Reverend Chris Manson, entitled Trustful and Trustworthy. We are a faith without creed. We do not have a proscribed set of beliefs we all share. And unlike our friends of some other faiths, some of us do not believe in some higher power, some being in which we can trust to take care of us in our world. So we root our faith, our trust, in a set of principles and values that we share. And in closing, let's honor the brave, consequential women in this room and in our lives. Let us celebrate their strength, resilience, and the impact they've made across the generations. Let's remember some of the fights that we have already fought in the past and the fights that we will be fighting in the future. We can do this. Here's to acknowledging our stories, our sacrifices, and our triumphs. May we continue to uplift and support one another as we navigate life's challenges together. Thank you, Kendall. Yeah, we're done. Yeah. Because there's no peace.